Lowe's knows you take pride in every project. So take on what's next today with a free select Craftsman hedge trimmer or leaf blower when you buy a 20-volt push mower. That's a $119 value on reliable, high-performance Craftsman tools you trust. For the power to do it all, build, repair, restore, maintain, go with Craftsman. Available at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 5/21. While supplies last. Selection varies by location.
38% of Ohio's teenagers have spent money on gambling in video and online games. And the earlier a child is introduced to gambling behaviors, the higher the risk of experiencing a gambling disorder as an adult. Start the conversation at changethegameohio.org.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
TRE in the afternoon. Presented by Hannah Murray.
Good afternoon. It's just coming up to 10 past five. You are listening to Men Talk. With me in the studio today is Matt Smith, Russell Hood and Paul Mellier. Hello.
Hello. Hello. How are you?
And we have a joke here as well. We have the perfect setup for a joke because we have an Englishman, an Irishman and a Scotsman. Yay.
What's the punchline?
Yeah, exactly. We'll see. We'll see how you get on. What could possibly go wrong, as Giles would say. So it is Easter. There isn't an article about this, but I thought I might as well start with this. We don't need to get into serious religion and stuff unless you want to. But I just wondered, as adults, does Easter mean anything to you? Is it something that you celebrate? Do you buy eggs? Do you eat eggs? Does it just kind of pass you by? You know, how do you feel about Easter? What does it mean?
For me, being over here, the pageantry of the processions, I absolutely love them.
Yeah,
particularly the Good Friday one, how solemn it is. We go to the one up in San Pedro, and then the Sunday Mass. It's pretty incredible. I don't know if you've seen the display up there in the church at the moment. I mean, it's off the charts, like, you know.
Yeah.
Because last Easter Sunday, it rained so badly, they had to bring the whole band inside a very small church.
Yeah.
So you had a 60-piece brass band.
Wow.
And the walls were literally vibrating.
Was it not
accurate, I was so tempted to take out my phone. And of course, the best part is the crunchy Easter egg Sunday morning.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So you enjoy it very much then?
Oh, I do. The crunchy Easter egg.
Yeah. I've got three youngsters. Well, youngsters, 16, 12, and 8. But yeah, of course, it's the tradition of chocolate eggs in the morning and that sort of thing. And my wife stocks up way beforehand.
Yeah.
Actually, to Gibraltar. And she goes and stocks up. It's lovely. Mm. Yeah, it still is. Yeah.
And do you guys have eggs or just the kids?
Say again?
Would you and Katie have eggs or would it just be the children?
Katie eats a lot of chocolate eggs.
She'll appreciate you saying that, I'm sure.
Well, she might be listening. But I'm not. I don't have such a
sweet tooth. You don't buy each other an egg for Easter?
No, because there's enough in the house for the kids.
Okay, fair enough. So you can always have a nibble if you desire.
Okay. Cream egg.
Oh, yes, cream egg. Yeah. Cream egg. Russell?
Well, I'm afraid I'm the boring one. I just see it's 4 days of having a lie-in.
Nice.
Having to get up for work.
Absolutely.
Love it.
No, fair enough. Good stuff. We sometimes do Easter eggs, sometimes not. He bought me an Easter egg this year, and I said, but it was a couple of days ago. And I said, I wasn't sure whether to get you one or not. I said, should we just share this one? And we decided that was a good thing to do because we're, you know, trying to be healthy and all that. So we kind of discussed it.
My kids and family get annoyed with me because I sort of take a little bit off and keep it for about half a week.
Oh, really?
No.
Oh,
yeah,
no,
slowly, and it has to be in the fridge.
It has to be in the fridge. Yeah. We've had a couple of eggs from friends, actually, which was really nice. So we're kind of trying to make them last, having a little bit of chocolate with a cup of tea at night.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Very sensible. This is an interesting... This one is the article is aimed at women, but I thought I would ask you as well, because I wondered if it's something that you had thought of.
Okay.
And a lot of women might not have thought of it either, you know, just because it comes up in an article. It doesn't mean it's true.
Mm.
So it says, as the story goes, Cinderella has to leave the ball by midnight before the fairy godmother's spell wears off. Now, more than half of British women have the same idea. Research suggests the traditional weekend schedule of drinks at 9 p.m, shots at midnight, and crawling into bed at 3 a.m. could become a thing of the past. A study shows that 51% of women who go out drinking say they are home by 12. In fact, 65% actually prefer an evening at home, while just 5% say their perfect night would be out partying.
So, sorry, what percent say they're home by 9 o'clock?
None.
I'm wondering, it doesn't say what time they start to that.
It doesn't, I mean, in fairness.
You know, 12 o'clock, lunch, brunch, or, you know, a few white wines, wine splitzer.
And so you think having lunch and being home at midnight is a good kind of...
No.
Sounds like a long run.
You've been spending too long.
That's a long lunch. But I'm just wondering whether you think, not from, forget the Cinderella reference, obviously, but as you've got older, whether you think more about timings, whether you think, oh, you know, I don't really want a late night, if you prefer lunch. I mean, I quite like going out for lunch and then trying to be sensible and be home way before midnight. Because I'm likely to, you know, feel more sprightly the next day.
Well,
so I quite like a lunch.
Well, after 11, I don't think about time because I'm asleep.
Okay, so you wouldn't be out.
No. Not at this age, no.
It's, age? Come on!
The youngest.
Stop
sorry,
it.
I'm sorry.
I'm with three, yes. Go on. Well, you know, with three small kids, although I've got something planned this evening, which I will be out late for, but...
Oh, yeah. There we go.
I wonder what that could be.
I think if an evening happens naturally, like if it just flows, the conversation flows, you're having fun, it's not planned. And you look at your watch and, oh, it's 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
But I mean, sometimes you can just be bored or something and say, do you know what, Curry's on, Carnation Street's on, you know, 9 o'clock.
I'm with you there. It depends on the evening and what you've got the next day.
Oh, yeah.
And the company. And yeah, that can happen. So often the best nights aren't planned. When you're just chatting and having a great time and you suddenly go, oh my goodness, look at the time.
Exactly. As the best night is when you forget about the time.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't remember.
Which isn't always easy to do if you've got stuff
on. I can't remember the last time I actually went out to a pub drinking.
Really?
No, because it's now...
Oh, you should come out with us.
Sounds like a good night then.
It's more about going out for dinner and having a few drinks. Yeah, maybe it's an age thing now. Because... You know, the idea of, like, when I was in London, I would be out in the pub quite regularly, several pints, get home, late dinner. Now that's just like, I'd rather go out for dinner, have a few drinks with, and just chill out. And yes, I like to be home by 11 as well.
Yeah.
Especially if you could work in the morning.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, well,
that's a game changer.
I know I find if I'm playing paddle or playing some sport, and have a drink after it. I'm not productive for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
It'd be just two small beers, but playing sport in the heat, having two small beers, like I need a nap.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
this one, I get into the bed, Matt. It's not a siesta. It's a sleep, Matt. My son was told before...
To get into your PJs and everything.
Oh, I love a power nap.
Oh, yeah.
I love an afternoon nap. I can totally do that. Some people can't. Some people really can't. I could do a 20-minute, half-an-hour nap, absolutely.
I can do 1 hour.
Okay.
1 hour. You feel groggy if you don't.
Yeah.
You feel too groggy if it's. Yeah.
If it's longer.
Yeah.
You mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I won't sleep in the evening.
Yeah.
Oh, no, but there has to be a duvet involved.
I'm just a couch man. You know.
No.
I'm fine on the couch.
No, there has to be totally horizontal.
You don't have duvets in the summer, though, do you? Or do you have like a summer duvet?
Well, it's kind of summer duvet.
Summer duvet.
Or maybe just a duvet cover.
Okay. Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. No, we do that. We go. I mean, we have all kinds of stages. Yeah. You know, going through the year, from thick duvet to nothing whatsoever.
Just sheets at night.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so you were saying that you fall asleep on the couch.
Yeah. Why?
You know, you're,
that sounds worrying.
No, you're lucky because I tend to drool. So
I don't need to share everything.
No, I don't. So I try and keep me away from the couch.
Yes, that makes sense. I understand that. I always feel like sleeping on the couch, I get like a crick in my neck or something, because it's not completely comfortable. So I'd rather sleep on the bed.
I was just thinking, you could just like, you have a wee ball resting on your shoulder. Your chin on your
chin. Like a drip ball.
Your drip ball. Oh, no. That wouldn't be a good look, I have to say.
Might take that to Dragon's Den.
Yeah, one that fits under the chin so you don't get the mark.
Shoulder,
That's a great idea. We all have our own idea as to what makes the perfect day. I have a feeling I know what yours are going to be. But such plans may be redundant, as scientists claim to have discovered the formula for the best 24 hours possible. I was quite disappointed when I read this. I thought it could be far more exciting. So apparently, the perfect day includes 6 hours of family time, which I suppose, depending on your family, a lot of people were like, what? But that's quite nice. 2 hours spent with friends. And this is the bit I don't get. 90 minutes of other socialising. Well, who are you socialising with if it's not your friends? Don't quite understand that bit. 2 hours of exercising.
2 hours?
That's crazy.
And 1 hour eating. And unsurprisingly, it should have no more than 6 hours of work.
Well, last one's fine.
Your perfect day would include 6 hours of work?
No, I haven't counted this up, but where do you sleep?
No, well, I mean, after you've done all that, I suppose.
I'd start off 7 hours sleep, and if there's anything left after that, because it might go to 8 or 9, then it gets spread around.
Plus the 1 hour you're taking the day as well.
Absolutely. The eating has to be at least 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
You know,
because it's experience eating.
Yeah. And what about cooking and doing other chores as well that you've got to fit into that?
But why would chores be included in a perfect day? This isn't like...
Very true.
Yeah.
Very true.
This is... Yeah. You know, think outside the box. Yeah. I'm thinking, you know, why would one include, depending on what your job is and how much you enjoy your job, you know, for most people, they're not going to go, I'd like to work for 6 hours on my perfect day. I mean, you know.
And when they say 6 hours with your family, does that mean sitting, talking to them for 6 hours?
Exactly. Actually spending time together.
Wouldn't work.
It's a long time, isn't it? 6 hours.
It takes me about half an hour to get them out of the house. So it's 5 and a half.
Exactly. So what kind of things would you think about in your perfect day?
Well,
could be whatever you like.
Okay, well, wake up, Pappy.
Yes.
You know.
Of course.
I won't elaborate.
No.
A nice brekkie.
Yep.
And
he's lost it. A nice what would the nice breakfast mean?
Well, it could be healthy, or it could be rashers, sausages, eggs. You know,
nice.
Maybe a nice walk or a swim with my partner.
Yeah,
and have something booked for that night that we both want to go to. Maybe a bit of live music.
Nice.
That excites both of us, like, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Something to look forward to. You know?
Sounds good.
Yeah,
any variation on that?
Yeah, I mean, without sounding cheesy, living in Spain, it's easier to have a lovely day with my children.
Is.
You just, you know, you can go out. It's not
nice rare. That you included your children.
Thank you.
That's a good move, Matt.
I've got it written on my arm.
Say something nice about the kids.
Yeah. I was told by my wife. Yeah.
So spending time with the family would be a nice day.
Passeo and all that.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Oh, would yours honestly be sleeping, Russell?
Well, there's a fair amount of sleep. There's a fair amount of sleep. And I must be one of these really antisocial people that really enjoy their own company.
Oh, that's nice. That's a good quality
time. It is. It is, to the point where I actively avoid people a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So I'd rather spend a quality hour with maybe some good friends.
Yeah.
And then get home and probably binge the latest series that has just completely got my attention.
Yeah.
And and just immerse myself in that.
Nice. And that would be a good day. Yeah.
And then just I go for walks and stuff as well. But yeah, I think it's nice to have time to yourself and do things that you really enjoy, whether it's exercise. I love reading. So yeah. I can just get lost in a book for hours. So.
Yeah, it's lovely. So when you haven't got a lot going on, either like literally, physically, or in your mind, because totally. That can stop me from reading as well if I'm thinking about loads of things. So it's nice to be able to just switch off and get into a good book.
Absolutely. Shut the world out and ignore it.
Yeah, love that.
Wow. The whole world, just shut it off.
Oh, yeah, completely. Completely. Yes. We see enough of his ears. I don't want it intruding the whole time.
I get a feeling you're not going to give me your phone number.
I've got it.
Don't use it.
We're going to take a break.
TRE. Talk Radio Europe. Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Men Talk. With me in the studio today is Matt Smith, Russell Hood and Paul Melia. There is an article here about colours. To get what you want in life, it seems you may have to nail your colours to the mast. In fact, wearing certain shades could give you an advantage in work, love and friendship. For example, a gold-hued garment on a first date may mark the beginning of a lifelong relationship. Now, I can only assume this is aimed at women. Because if I went on a first date and a guy was wearing like a gold jacket or something, there probably wouldn't be a second date. So I think it kind of depends on what kind of things you would wear. But without going into detail on all the different colours that you should wear, light blue could help you land your dream job, blah, blah, blah. I think it's all a bit silly, to be honest. But it made me want to ask you, as men, about colours. And whether you think about colours with regards to your clothing, you know, you don't like certain colours, or you wear certain colours if you were going out for a nice meal, or if you were going for a job interview, you know, do you think about that colour with what you're wearing, I mean?
Well, I think everybody's got some favourite clothes and ones that you think, I look really good in that. So, you know, it might be a shirt or a pair of trousers. And it probably doesn't matter what the colour is. It's just you feel good in it.
Yeah.
And if you go, yeah, I've nailed it with that. So, like today I'm wearing this pale blue. Now, I know
very nice.
It brings out my eyes.
It does bring out your there eyes, you Russell. Go. There we go.
There you go. So, but that wasn't the reason I put it on. But
no. But do you think, I mean, because a lot of people fall into the trap of living in black, you know, a lot of people wear black, and I think it takes a little bit more confidence, shall we say, in one's character, particularly for a man, I think. I think women generally wear more colour than men, and I love it when men wear colour because it's nice.
Yeah, I mean, in the summer months especially, I wear black, maybe because I'm self-conscious. About my body in it, and black tends to hide.
Isn't it hot though in the summer?
Well, no, I'll wear a polo neck and a t-shirt and that sort of thing. But it's maybe a self-conscious thing, you know.
Colour, Matt. You'd look nice in colour.
Thank you. But I think, you know, as men, it's easy. You know, it's very easy just to go, I'm wearing that today. I'm not choosing. Mm.
So you don't have a colourful wardrobe?
I do not. Okay. No, I do not.
Paul? You like a bit of colour.
If you've seen me Patrick's Day or New Year's Day, yes. I do have certain outfits for certain times. I do love colour.
Mm.
But exactly like Matt was saying, sometimes I can see someone, let's say, heading to a party, wearing a pair of white pants and a white shirt.
Okay.
A man.
Yeah.
And they look brilliant.
Yeah.
But they've also got a brilliant body. And they look good in it.
Yeah.
You know, I love to match colours. I find as I'm getting older, I'm probably wearing stuff a little bit looser.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
As well. My real big one is, particularly over here, if someone wears absolute multicolored shorts and then has this crazy multicolored t-shirt that they totally clash.
Yeah.
And then they have the sandals with the white socks.
Oh, yeah.
No, I don't.
If there's a good chance they're from one of the three countries that's represented here.
Which one?
Yes, it's interesting. I mean, so much of it is about feeling comfortable, you know, whatever you feel comfortable in. But I do like red particularly. I think I love red myself, and I do have some red dresses and red tops, and I love red. I think red's a great colour, and I like a man in red as well, because I mean, it's a confident colour, isn't it?
I have a pair of red chinos.
There you go.
They faded over the years. They're a little bit off red now, but
yeah.
There's, I know if a lady wears red, it does catch your eye.
Yeah, definitely.
You know what I mean?
The song.
Young, older, yeah. That was about his babysitter.
Really?
Yeah.
No.
No, really? And my mother used to love him, and she doesn't want anything to do with him now. The lady in red was
wrong,
about.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go.
So his babysitter when he was a child.
No.
Oh no. Oh, the babysitter to his daughter.
Who went on to be Miss World.
Oh.
You're ruining the song.
Yeah. Oh, come on, the song was overplayed years ago.
Yeah. So I agree.
So yes, so my moral is wear more colour.
Well, I think we live in the sunshine. No, everybody automatically wears more colour. People aren't so conscious of it as they are, say, in the UK.
Mm.
You know, from any of our three nations. I love wearing bright colours, you know, because it just makes you feel happy.
Yeah.
You know.
It does. It really does. I used to wear more black than I do now, definitely, right. Because it is a safe colour,
exactly.
As you say, if you're feeling self-conscious or whatever, you know, people feel slimmer and more comfortable in black. That's totally a thing for men and women.
Mm-hmm.
But going out there and putting on a bit more colour, and I totally agree. It does give you, make you feel happy.
Yes.
Definitely. Okay, more colour. This is a subject we talked about last week with the women, and I thought I'd save it to see if you had any thoughts on shoes. It's talking about wearing shoes for the right occasion, and then it goes into ridiculous detail saying what your shoes say about your personality, which is silly because we all have different types of shoes for different occasions. So I totally disagree with that. But I just wondered if you think about shoes, whether you look at other people's shoes, whether you judge people on their shoes, you know, whether it's something you don't really care or think about, you just buy something that's comfortable and fits, and that's about it.
Mm.
Well, I can ask my radio colleagues here, what colour shoes am I wearing?
Oh, you can't look.
You look bad.
My answer is no.
You don't take any notice.
No. Well, special occasions, obviously. You know.
Yeah.
You know, things like, you know, going into a nicer restaurants and things like that. Obviously, you know, nice pair of leather shoes. But I personally have my standard day-to-day shoes.
Yeah.
I don't know about you guys, but
I'm wearing ones for comfort at the moment.
Yeah, me too.
You know, with built-ins and that. But I do love shoes. For me, look, if someone wears a really smart suit and their shoes are scruffy,
absolutely.
I just think, why did you do that?
Like,
you know what I mean?
What a waste.
Or they have a pair of brown shoes with a black suit.
Yeah.
And, you know, that good looking fella with the white.
Yeah. he
wouldn't get away with it. Like,
no.
I have a pair of spats. I have a pair of spats that I'd wear that if we're going to a dance or something like that, or dressed up, they're Barclays, and I absolutely love them.
Yeah.
So they come out once in a blue moon.
Yeah.
But, you know, they do make me feel good when I wear them, like the bright clothes and all that.
Yeah.
What I was saying about, like, you know.
Well, it's the same as a lovely suit, you know, if you're wearing that on a special occasion, you do feel... You feel better, don't you?
Yeah.
But you could be wearing a really good pair of shoes with a pretty cheap suit and still look good, but not the other way around.
Not the other way around.
Interesting, yeah.
I mean, I think I've told you before, I work in recruitment, and one of the first things I always do is glance at what people have got on their feet.
Okay.
And if they are scruffy shoes, it's like, that will be something I'm telling them about before they go for an interview.
Right,
you know, because that creates an impression.
I agree.
It does create an impression. Yeah. And you don't undo a first impression.
No.
So it better be damn good.
Yeah, you can't get yourself out of it. You can't explain it away, can you? You just have to create that first impression. And I think it's the same in an interview to a first date. People will judge you on a first date for sure. So, yeah. Okay. Pay more attention to shoes. This is an interesting one that I got from today's paper. It's quite a controversial one. In fact, let's take a break.
Talk Radio Europe.
Your voice in Spain.
Hannah Murray. TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Men Talk with me in the studio today, Matt Smith, Russell Hood and Paul Mellier. Okay, the headline reads, is it ever okay to tell someone they smell? I don't know if you saw, I think it was this week. Did you see what happened at the tennis? It kind of happened at the tennis.
Oh, yeah.
These two women were playing tennis and one of the tennis players said, can you ask her to put some deodorant on?
That was
near the microphone.
That was an English lady? An English lady?
I think a British tennis player about her French opponent. Yeah, can you ask her to put some deodorant on? And she was near the microphone and didn't realise, so everybody heard it.
But you're at opposite sides of the court, no?
Well, I don't know.
When they crossed over.
Oh, I see.
And she's the woman who's written the article is talking about, you know, when her eldest son grew up, you know, kind of teenage years, she noticed that he was starting to smell and had to tell him to get deodorant and that kind of thing. And it's a very, very awkward, difficult thing. I wonder if you had any experience of it or
well,
these two
what
have,
you would do.
I've had a bit.
Go on, Russell.
Oh, dear. Well, a very long time ago, when I was working in London running a restaurant, I had to sack a waitress because she had BO. But I had to warn her about it first because one of the owners
of
the
restaurant... So you gave her a chance to do something about it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And at that point, I mean, this will give you an idea of how long ago it was, there was a product on TV being advertised called Zirconium ZR, or something like that, which was meant to deal with the worst kind of BO.
Oh, yeah.
So I recommended it to her.
Right.
I don't think that went down too well.
Yeah.
And then finally when my boss said, she reaches across when she's putting plates down and I can still smell it.
Oh, yeah, that's so not good.
And it was awful. I was like 22 at the time.
Wow.
And I had to let
And how old would she have been?
22, 23.
Oh, so similar age as
you. Yeah, it was awful.
And where was she from, Russell?
At Walthamstow.
That's where I'm from, Russell.
It wasn't you,
I promise it wasn't me.
I remember her name. I'm not going to say it, but it definitely wasn't Hannah.
Okay. So she didn't take it well?
No.
And it was hard for you to do as well.
But luckily I didn't get a black eye, so no. I was quite pleased about that.
I remember there was a girl at my school who didn't smell very nice at all, and I'm not going to go into detail because it's really not very nice. But anyway, it really, really wasn't good, and we would have been about, I don't know, 8, 9, something like that kind of age. And she came over to my house a few times, and my mum said, oh my goodness, she really doesn't smell very nice. And I was like, I know. And she said, have you told her? And I said, no, I can't tell her. And mum and I debated it for quite a while because it was obviously a really sensitive, difficult subject. And I said, she'll probably never speak to me again. And mum said, yeah, but she needs to have a wash. And, you know, clearly her parents aren't, you know, instructing her to do so. Yeah. So someone needs to tell her, otherwise she'll go through her life like that. So in the end, I said it really diplomatically and she cried and never spoke to me again.
Yeah.
And it was awful.
And you still remember it?
But I do remember it. But I think, from what I can remember, I think she started to smell a bit better.
She's probably in therapy, though.
Well, she probably... I mean, how do you say it with the person going, well... I don't know. Can it be taken? Oh, do I? Thank you very much.
I think in a sports setting, if you're in a locker room or a dressing room,
yeah,
and you say to someone, "Jesus, you know, there's a pong or something like that." I don't think it's that bad in that situation.
No, true.
Like I know when our two sons played together in a final, and afterwards my mother went up to them to give them a big hug.
Yeah.
And my mother's abiding memory is how badly they smelled, both of them.
Yeah.
After these tight-fitting rugby shirts.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's so hard. If you only know someone as an acquaintance, to just say to them.
Yeah. I think you should be able to say it to loved ones. You really should.
No, with my boys, I'll just say, get in the shower, you stink.
Yeah. But,
oh, God, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, it depends on the situation. Yeah. Of course.
I mean, I might say, oh, gosh, what's that smell? Is it me? Even if I know it's not me.
Yeah.
That's quite a good way of doing it. Gosh, what's that smell? I hope it's not me. No, it's not me. And then look at the other person and, well, I wonder who it could be then. No, but, I mean, that's quite a good way of doing it. But you should be able to say to a loved one, I'd like to think, oh, a bit pongy, and that should be okay. Because if a loved one said that to me, I wouldn't be offended. I'd be mortified. I'd be like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I'll do something about it. I wouldn't be upset.
If anyone said it to me, I'd be, well, like you said, like on the sports field or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
But otherwise.
You should, it wouldn't be nice, but if it's a loved one, you should be like, oh my goodness, I'm so sorry, and whatever.
Yeah.
I find the only time I'd get like sweaty like that would be if I'm running late. I hate running late.
Yes.
I hate being late.
Yeah.
I'm married a punctual person. I'm a punctual person. Mm. And I find myself, I don't know what happens, but I get in an awful jock.
Yeah.
No offence.
No idea what it means.
But in a terrible state, like, you know what I mean? And I don't like that feeling.
No.
That of, you know, so being sweaty, like, you know.
Just a bit of stress or whatever, you're running late.
Not nice.
Yeah.
Okay, this one we definitely spoke about last week with the women, and I almost threw it in the bin, and then I thought, no, I'd be interested to see whether this meant anything to the men at all. The headline reads, "Want to date me? Not till I know your star sign." So, astrology, is this something you've ever been aware of, ever taken an interest in, ever thought about?
No.
No.
Okay, we'll move on to...
I'm a Pisces, that's all I know.
Oh, you know? Okay, what are you, Russell?
I'm the best sign of the zodiac.
Oh, a Leo then?
No.
No.
Aquarius.
Oh, we're opposites. Oh, opposites attract, Russell.
I don't know what that means.
What about you, Paul?
Leo.
Oh, yay! There you go. You see, Leos.
It's funny when you read the horoscopes, like, previously on the internet, and because how many are there? 12.
Yeah. You see, you're pretending you don't know, but you've just said when you read the horoscopes, Matt. But
this is why I stopped, because it applies to 12% of the population, each one.
Yes, they
and
are.
And they're so general. I mean, you know, so...
Yeah. No, that if you were interested, you know, having a proper astrologer that reads your chart and looks at the time that you were born and the moon rising and the sun and all of that gives you a much better... what they write in magazines and newspapers, it has to be general, but there's no way that that's going to be accurate for each and every star. It's just ridiculous. And so often it's about finding a love match and things like that. And I'm like, well, what about all the people in the world who have already found a love match? You know, straight away, that doesn't make any sense.
Well, they always used to give the job of the horoscopes to the newest person on the staff at whichever publication, say, right, you want to be a writer? Write the horoscopes. Do that for months, you know, having to come up with some creative nonsense every day, and then recycle them a few months later when no one would remember them.
Nice one. Okay, this again was aimed at the women, but I wondered whether you had a take on it. Just a third of young British women want to take their partner's surname when they marry. And almost a third of men, aged 18 to 34, said they would feel positively about a man taking their spouse's surname. So I just wondered if something you'd thought of, whether you wanted your partner to take your name, whether it was something you'd never thought about, whether you talked about doing it the other way, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, my surname is not that exciting. It's Smith. And I would have been fine with Katie, whose maiden name is Reynolds, being a Reynolds Smith. And that's what my nephew and niece have done. And they've combined their two surnames into one. So they both he's taken his surname, but she's kept hers. And he's taken her surname.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So,
oh, that's nice.
Yeah, which is quite nice now. Probably maybe a more modern thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got friends who have got married. I mean, I remember Fiona and Brian got married, and they just both kept their own surnames. They didn't hyphenate. They just kept their own. It just seems to be perfectly normal these days. Yeah. I'm surprised there's even an article about it.
I know. I mean, I've kept my surname. To be honest, I was really excited about becoming a Lopez because I thought it was a great surname to have.
Yeah.
But everybody told me how unbelievably complicated it is to change your name in Spain. So I just thought, I can't be bothered.
Just a bureaucracy.
Maybe I'm not that bothered. So, I wanted to keep Murray professionally. So I just thought, well, instead of going through all the paperwork, I'll just call myself Hannah Lopez on Facebook and then Hannah Murray still officially.
But so in your passport, still Hannah Murray.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, passport, bank, all of that. It's still
I know. Hannah I know Murray. In Ireland and certainly in our friend structure and all that, that most of our friends have taken their husband's name.
Yeah.
Probably an Irish thing, you know.
Well, it's traditional, isn't it?
It is very traditional.
Yeah.
But I have noticed lately people are getting married later for a lot of reasons. They can't afford a house, you know. But people have made a career and a name for themselves in work. You know, ladies in the bank or in as doctors or, you know, in accountant, whatever. But they've made a career for themselves by their name. So they're tending to keep their name because that is what they're known as.
Absolutely.
So there has been a big change. And I've seen that, like, you know.
Yeah.
Because with a double barrel name, where does it stop? You know.
When you have kids and they take,
you know.
Well, it's like the Portuguese in Brazil, they have really long surnames because they just keep taking.
You could have like 20 names, couldn't you?
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah.
At what point do you go, nah, I'm not taking that one. I'll leave that one.
But then I think historically, the whole thing about the wife taking the husband's name is kind of going back to the days where the wife was seen as a chattel of the husband and therefore becoming property. So it's back to that whole idea of the patriarchy and saying, well, you're now my property, you don't have my name. You know, back to the days when women were not allowed to have bank accounts, which was not that long ago.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's just it's a rebalancing of that as well. Yeah. It's not necessarily a political thing. I think it's just something that's perfectly normal and right.
Yeah.
There
will be a lot of modern women who are feminists who literally will say, for that very reason, why should I take my husband's name? I've got my own name, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And be very kind of forward thinking and think that as a as an old fashioned patriarchy thing and specifically not want to take
I think the majority of men would have no problem. Absolutely not.
No.
These days.
Yeah.
And if they have a problem, that's a red flag.
Yes, exactly. If they have that much of an issue, then maybe you shouldn't marry them in the first place.
But what about grannies?
What about grannies?
Well, maybe I'm speaking about my mother.
or maybe not.
She would like to see the family name, Melia.
Yeah.
Passed on.
Yes.
And I know she would, you know, because she's mentioned it a lot of times. No pressure, sons, if you're listening. you know, I know she has mentioned it, that she would love to think the family name would remain.
Yeah.
So, and I do understand, I totally respect, like, at Christmas time, Christmas cards are amazing coming into our house because, you know, after 30 years of marriage, still Ursula's friends use her maiden name on the card.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Which is cool.
Funny.
No, it's cool. It's cool, like, you know.
You're not that bothered. As long as your mum doesn't see them.
That's true.
we better take the last break.
TRE, Talk Radio Europe.
Hannah Murray, TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You are listening to the very last part of today's Men Talk with Matt Smith, Russell Hood and Paul Melia. There is an article here that surprised me for a few reasons. It reads, young people are prioritising travel over giving to charity, with their donations dropping to the lowest level in 10 years. Nearly two-thirds of Gen Z, aged around 18 to 28, plan to spend more on experiences this year, with travel, food, arts and live music high on their agenda. I don't know about you, but when I was that age, I wasn't giving to charity, were you?
No.
Am I the exception?
Well, where are they getting money from?
Well, quite. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, to give to charity is a lovely thing to do, but you need a bit of extra kind of disposable income going on to be giving, certainly regularly, to charity. And when you're that age, you normally haven't.
Well, you need to be working first. And my understanding of Gen Z is they just don't want to.
What, work at all? Oh, dear.
I just want to go travelling.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I'm all for all travelling. I did that when I was... All travelling? I did that when I was 18. And I think that's the really great life lesson thing to do as a young person.
Yeah.
Where did you go?
I did a year in Australia, 3 months in New Zealand, a month in Thailand. That was my biggest trip, all at the same time. But fantastic. I worked in Tenerife and Holland and Greece and
places.
I loved it. Once I started, I was like, well, this is fun.
Yeah.
You know, working in different places. You know, I never went anywhere with a budget. I went there knowing that I needed to find a job really quickly.
Yeah.
And Mum's advice was go and find an Irish pub wherever you are when you're on your own and you need to make friends, you need somewhere to live and you need a job, just go and find an Irish pub.
And where are you going tonight?
There's an Irish pub. It's great advice though, it is, because they're always friendly and offer good advice on where to go, so it's brilliant advice.
We have our two sons are away, one's in Australia and the other's in Canada.
Oh, and amazing.
I'm thrilled. That obviously missed them like hell, but absolutely thrilled they're travelling and they're, you know, you can get up, we get up early Saturday mornings to watch them play rugby and that sort of thing. But, you know, you're saying about prioritise. Years ago, I didn't prioritise travelling.
Mm.
You know, there wasn't as many travelling as there is now. But, I mean, there's even a part of Sydney that's called County Coogee. There's so many Irish in it, like, you know what I mean? But I think for young people, I think it's brilliant to see the world.
Absolutely.
Open your eyes to the world.
Before Carnation Street, like, you know?
Yeah.
Wait.
And it gives you a real understanding of what's out there. Different people, different personalities, different backgrounds.
Yeah.
You know, if all you know is what you know, your street and your little town.
Your Irish pub.
There's a whole world out there.
Yeah,
and
I
before
agree.
You settle down and have a family, if that's what you choose to do, it's great to have experienced the world as a single person, I think, as well, before you settle down.
And it teaches them so many skills, how to compromise, how to communicate with different cultures, how to be more open-minded.
Mm.
I remember a secretary of ours in London once, she was an Essex girl, absolutely lovely kid. She went off travelling, came back. She came back as a worldly young woman. And she saw the difference herself.
Amazing.
And she suddenly aspire to a lot more than perhaps she would have done had she just stayed in that little microcosm that she was already in.
Yeah.
And I saw that with a lot of young people who'd been travelling. You know, we had a policy of taking on graduates. I only wanted ones who had been around the world.
Oh, I love that.
Wow. Because they had the social skills.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they'd shown that bit of gumption.
Yeah.
You know, so it was wonderful.
And, you know, sometimes people say, oh, how did you, we were so brave to do that, you know, having the guts. And, you know, you do need to be confident, but you don't need to be on your own a lot of the time. You know, if you're the kind of person that would go into a pub and go up to the bar and say, hey, how are you doing? And chat to the person next to you, regardless of how old they are or what sex they are or whatever, just to be friendly, then you're fine. So wherever you are in the world, you don't need to think, I'm on my own, I've got no friends. Just go into an Irish pub and go, hey, how's it going? And before you know it, you've got some friends.
Absolutely. My daughter was born here in Spain, my two boys in England, but travelling, when she gets older, travelling around England, or Scotland and Ireland would be an adventure for her. So I think she could do that. That'd be good.
It would be really good. There's so much to see. And considering the size difference between England and Australia, I have seen more of Australia than I have done of England, which is weird.
It's about the size of Western Europe, isn't it?
It's unbelievable. I can't remember the figures, but it was, you can fit like 27 Englands into Queensland alone, just one of the
I've been lucky enough to go around as well.
Yeah, really?
It's massive.
It's a great country. Yeah. Sydney was definitely my favourite place.
Wasn't,
that's where your son is.
Yeah.
Oh, I loved it.
Yeah.
But it was so much about the people. I interviewed a woman the other day talking about travel, and she said so much of why she loved a place was to do with the people that she met.
And
it's totally true. That people make experiences, don't they?
Yeah.
And I think if you're in a country and you have the language, that really helps.
Yeah, I know, which is why Australia went up.
Well, that's, yeah. Well, I was thinking, yeah. I know my oldest did a year in university up in Bilbao.
Yeah.
And he had fluent Spanish, but he loved a bit of Basque as well. But it really got him integrated into the area, like, you know.
Mm. And
most people appreciate you.
Yeah.
If you try and...
Oh, absolutely. We are at the end of the show. Thank you all very much for coming in today. It's been great fun.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.
Did you know 38% of Ohio's teenagers have spent money on gambling in video and online games? Items like mystery boxes, skins, and spin to win mimic gambling, putting children at a higher risk of experiencing a gambling disorder as an adult. So get in the know about youth gambling and start the conversation with discussion guides, parent resources, and more at changethegameohio.org. That's changethegameohio.org.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.